You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week. We'll go over the numbers for last year's Oregon Shakespeare Festival, why a big project at SOU is on hold, and the latest on Ashland Community Hospital. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And I'm Roman Battaglia, politics, science, and environment reporter.
Roman, you brought us a report on the Oregon Shakespeare Festival's 2025 season. Tell us, what is that report about?
Yeah, so it was called, or they called it an impact report. It was like this little report that OSF had sent to donors. We had kind of learned about its existence from someone else and were able to get a copy of this report. And it basically kind of shines a light on the organization's inner workings, especially their financial workings. They are a nonprofit, so you can see some of their financials, but not this far, you know, this soon and this in depth. So we are able to kind of see more. They say that this is a step towards providing more transparency, but I'm going to note this report was only sent to donors and it's not available on their website right now. But it does show how they performed during the 2025 season last year.
Financially, not
yes,
on stage.
Financially, yeah, which was their 90th. I mean, I guess a little bit on stage because, you know, people pay to go to the shows. But, you know, this was their 90th anniversary. It was kind of a big comeback year for them. It was their first full season with, you know, full shows since the pandemic, so it was kind of a big deal for them.
So what were some of the highlights from that report?
Yeah, I mean, it really showed a lot of good successes for them from last season. I think the big one that I saw is a 42% increase in ticket sales from 2024. They made $14.9 million in tickets. And then most shows met or exceeded their revenue goals that they had set. The show that performed the best was Quixote Nuevo, which sadly I didn't get to go see because it was sold out all the
time.
And
it was in one of the smaller
theaters. It was in one of the smaller theaters, but they met almost 200%. They were at 180% of their revenue goal for that show. And then the show that performed the worst was Julius Caesar, which was in their Angus Bohmer Theater. But OSF did note that the Julius Caesar had the second most performances. But then I also looked, and the show that had the most performances, which was The Importance of Being Earnest, was also in the same theater and exceeded its revenue goals. So I don't know. There was also some increases across the board in terms of where people came from. The largest group of people come from Oregon, of course, but California, 32% of households came from California. Then they saw large growth in Washington State and east of here. The only decline in visitors was international, but that kind of makes sense because of recent events, and it's a small number anyways.
Yeah.
And also, I think important to show is that 68% of all the households saw three or more shows, which OSF was really talking about and saying that this shows that the audiences value the variety of shows that they have. And they chalk that up to their rotating repertory practice where actors perform in multiple shows. So that's why they're able to have so many shows going on at the same time.
So some of those out-of-state visitors are clearly like making a week of it or a long weekend.
Okay,
well, give us a brief overview of the organization's struggles a little bit. You've gotten into it some.
Yeah, and that's kind of why we cover OSF a lot. I mean, we don't cover every theater company, but OSF is really big. They're a big attraction, but they've also been through a lot, especially during the pandemic. They had to hold two emergency fundraisers back in 2023, or they could have canceled the festival overall. Jane did a really good story back then looking into their finances, discovering the reasons. We found that a big factor was their large dependence on ticket sales. So ticket sales made up 70 to 80% of the revenue compared to other theaters where it's only 50 to 60%. So that means, you know, when people left during the pandemic and there were no shows, and also with wildfire season and smoke having to cancel shows, that hurts OSF a lot more than other theaters. They also don't have a lot of liquid assets. A lot of it's in property or their endowment fund, so they don't have a lot of money they can actually use. And then they've also had a lot of leadership changes recently that's just made leadership a little more difficult. But, you know, they're getting back into it. This report shows that in terms of ticket sales, a much smaller percentage of their money this year, only 34% came from ticket sales. A much larger number, 50%, came from actual contributions or donations to the organization.
Oh, wow. So you talked to OSF's chief philanthropy officer. What did she have to say?
Yeah, I talked to Jennifer Ryan, and she actually started early last year. So this last season was her first season back here at OSF. She said that, you know, this shows that OSF's recovery plan's working. She also highlighted the large amount of donations they received last year, which was $22 million. It was a big increase from 2024. And a lot of that, I think around $6 million is from large seven-figure donations.
Wow.
So they got a lot of big one-time donations. But, you know, that could be a problem in the future for OSF because the number of donors that they have in total donating is still very low. In 2019, they had, you know, less philanthropic gifts overall, but they had a larger number of donors, around 16,000 people, but now that's still less than half of that, only 6,500 members donating to OSF. So they're, you know, Ryan had said that they're really trying to get more members, and that's going to be important moving forward.
Ultimately, the goal is that, you know, in 5 years from now, we're not relying on big $5 million gifts to sustain us every year, right? But that is what we do need large investments now to give us that runway to keep building on the momentum, keep growing back in the really strong direction we're headed.
Yeah. So basically, you know, the big money is helpful right now, but, you know, they want to work on getting more donors overall. So they're going to probably rely more on donations moving forward rather than ticket sales to reduce that dependence, but they just don't know what that exact ratio is going to be yet. And, you know, the next season, the 2026 one, is going to start up in March, so it'll happen soon.
Just stay tuned another year. Mm-hmm. We'll find out. Thanks, Roman. Jane, you did some reporting this week on Southern Oregon University, where we're based here, new senior living community project. What happened there?
Yeah, so SOU has been working to build a special living community on campus for older adults. And basically the headline is that they announced this week that the project has been paused because one of the two finalists for the project withdrew their proposal.
And can you tell us a little bit more about this project?
So the goal, the idea for this project was to, number one, generate more revenue for the university, which has been struggling financially in recent years. And then number two, they want to encourage more lifelong learning. So SOU already has OLLI, which is the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, has programs and social programs for older adults. And so that's an important mission for them. So they're trying to work on that with this senior living community. The idea, the project has been in the works for a while. So SOU had asked for proposals for the project last January. Two partners presented their ideas for the project to the community last summer. They had big presentations. Their proposals included apartments, wellness programs, dining services, common areas, learning facilities, fitness programs. And so the project was, you know, coming along. They had these two finalists. SOU was supposed to announce which one they were going to pick this fall. But instead, they're now announcing this week in the end of January that they're pausing the project. So basically, one of the finalists, which is based in Medford, that's Pacific Retirement Services, and they operate Rogue Valley Manor, they told the university this month that they've decided to focus their resources elsewhere. So it seems to me that SOU could have picked the other finalists. There were two finalists. The other one is called McCormick Barron Salazar. They're in St. Louis. But it seems SOU maybe didn't want to do that. Maybe they wanted the local group. I don't know. But it's interesting to see what will happen with this project. If it does get completed, it would be the first senior living community on a university campus in the state of Oregon, which would be pretty cool. And meanwhile, the site is all cleared and ready to go. They've got this 4-ish acre site that used to be residence halls on campus, but it's currently empty. It's been cleared and it's ready to go. And the idea is to put this senior living community there. So we'll have to see what they'll decide to do with that.
Yeah. And so what do we know about what happens next?
So SOU says they're going to be considering possible next steps, potentially issuing a new request for proposals. SOU President Rick Bailey says they're still working on it. His plan is for this project to endure for 100 years. And so in his words, it's okay if it takes a little while to get going. So SOU says they're going to be working to refine their strategy, reevaluate some long-term effects, explore all options. So it's a little bit vague. We don't really know what exactly they're doing. They're going to take a pause, reevaluate their options, and then figure out where to go from here, basically. And I should note also that JPR is licensed to SOU, but we do cover the university just like any other institution.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Jane. Justin, you reported on some public pushback to the reduction of services at Ashland Community Hospital. First, what's changing there?
Yeah, so Asante announced last month that it would convert Ashland Community Hospital into a satellite campus of its Rogue Regional Medical Center that's in Medford. And that change will end inpatient care and also close the birthing center at the facility by the spring. That's the plan. And this was a pretty big shock for residents. You know, the hospital has a long history in Ashland. It was actually owned by the city until 2013. And it's especially known for that birthing center, which I mentioned, which offers some pretty unique care options for the region. So like water births, access to doulas and midwives. The hospital is sort of known for supporting low intervention births. And people travel, like I mentioned, from around the region for that care. So last Friday, there was a small protest against closing this birthing center in Ashland. That was by Healthcare for All Oregon. And this week, there was a number of residents who spoke at the Ashland City Council on the issue. It was a pretty packed room. Here's Glenda Radcliffe, a local nurse, speaking at that meeting.
People in Ashland are shocked and saddened by this move. There has been a lack of transparency and concern from both Asante and our city government. It is clear by the turnout this evening that the citizens of Ashland want and deserve more.
Yeah, so it's really, you can tell, an issue that locals feel passionately about, and some even, you know, move to Ashland with understanding that there would be this general hospital in town.
So why is Asante making this change?
That's something also I think that has rubbed people the wrong way. So Asante mentioned only 37 Ashland residents gave birth at the facility in 2025. But nurses at the hospital say the hospital actually had over 200 births in total because, like I've mentioned, people go to the hospital from around the region. It's a draw, not only for Ashland. Asante's also blamed increases in costs and regulations. But according to OHA data that I looked at, the hospital is making money, you know, millions in profit a year.
So this will take place in the spring?
Right. That's the plan. So the hospital will continue emergency care, outpatient surgery, and things like labs and imaging. But yeah, it's closing inpatient care in the birthing center this spring. Another issue people have raised is the terms by which the city sold the hospital back in 2013. So under that agreement, Asante must operate the facility as a general hospital through 2028 or pay a $4 million fee to the city. And there's no clear answer yet whether the city will actually require Asante to pay that. So that's something people want to know.
Okay, well, thank you, Justin. Jane, you've been covering news from the Jackson County Library District recently. What's the latest update there?
Yeah, it seems like there's been a lot of updates about this recently, but the board voted unanimously on Wednesday night to begin termination negotiations with their director, Carrie May. I watched that meeting virtually. Carrie May has been on paid administrative leave, which they extended on Wednesday night. And this is all basically happening after incidents in December where there was a patron at the Talent Library branch who was watching videos of naked children. So there's a big public backlash to that and to how the library's leadership handled it. Carrie May has been there for over 7 years. Some people have really wonderful things to say about her. Some people have had some more negative things to say and say there's a toxic and corrupt leadership. In the meantime, the library says that everything will continue as usual and reassured its patrons that, you know, their staff is dedicated and the work will continue.
And so you mentioned that case in Talent or those incidents there. Mm-hmm. What ended up happening?
The Jackson County District Attorney announced there's no evidence to charge that patron with a crime. The DA investigated and found what the patron did was not illegal, and he won't be prosecuted because the videos don't meet the legal definition of child sexual abuse material. The DA says that mere nudity without sexual conduct or sexualized posing, it doesn't meet the definition. So no charges will be filed there unless new information comes forward. Meanwhile, the library district says they're taking this very seriously. They're reviewing policies, training their staff, and making sure that nothing like this happens again.
Because beyond some of the staff comments, this was really what the public backlash was over,
yes.
Right? Well, what else has the board been working on?
They have had a lot of meetings recently. There's been a lot of executive sessions. Number one, they've hired an HR firm to investigate these incidents in Talent and whether the library policies were properly followed and to provide some recommendations on how to prevent something like that happening again in the future. The board has also requested that Carrie May resign instead of being dismissed. And then they're also going to hire an investigator to examine the library's human resources department because there's been allegations of retaliatory and inappropriate behavior there. So there's a lot going on there, and the board's next meeting, they're going to hold a special meeting on Thursday, January 29th at 10:15 a.m., so I'll be following that as well.
And we'll be following right along with you, Jane. Thanks so much. That's it for the debrief this week. Thank you for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website at ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform.